Welcome to Cowboy Church with your host, Russ Weaver, and Susie McIntyre. So sit back and enjoy some good singing, some great testimony, and some good preaching. Welcome to Cowboy Church.
Hi, I'm Susie McIntyre.
And I'm Russ Weaver.
We're here on Cowboy Church, and we just want to welcome you.
You mean a lot to us. Seriously,
yeah.
We do a lot of work to make this thing happen. It's not like it's hard work, but it's fun work. It takes a long time to put these together, and it's really meaningful to us when we hear from you on the difference that it makes. We really don't have any idea unless you get back to us. And so we're excited today. We put a program together for you. We've got some singing, preaching, and testimonies, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all the regular kind of things, and probably some good scenery and maybe even a windmill song or something. We're glad to be with you at Cowboy Church today. So we won't take any more time. Right. We'll jump into it. How's
Sit
that?
Sit back, relax. Welcome to Cowboy Church.
Remember when you asked the Savior in, and the burden that was lifted when He took away your sin? Are you trusting and believing? Do you follow where He's leading? Look where you are today and where you've been. Is your heart a heart of fire? Does it burn with the desire to walk beside Him every single day? When you take Him at His word, then the flame inside will burn. He will lift you high if your heart's a heart of fire. You walk in, or do they see the flicker of a candle in the wind? Do you have a heart for others? Are you lifting up your brother? Is the purpose of your life to shine for Him? Is your heart a heart of fire? Does it burn?
I'd like to know who's been married more than 50 years here this morning. Whoa. Stand up. If you've been married more than 50 years, give them a hand clap. Okay, now I want you to sit down and I want to sing this to y'all. This is a love song for you. You know, Jesus is all into love, isn't He?
Listen to me. There's something you should know. I was meant for
you and you alone. Who I am and what I feel, no one else can have. You've got my heart and I won't take it back. So there it is. You have everything I have to give. And I promise you, as long as I live, I'm here to stay. Forever never fades away. Can't help it, I know that you're the one, and my love is endless, it just goes on and on. And even if the world should end and life on earth were through, oh, I promise you, as long as I live, I'm here to stay. Forever never fades away. I'm not going anywhere. So there. You know, your relationship with each other needs to be as solid as your relationship with God, because the two flow hand in hand down the road of life. Your spouse needs to know this.
You're there it is. You have everything I have to give. And I promise you, as long as I live, I'm here to stay. Never fades away. I'm not going anywhere. So there.
It's always somebody's fault. See, some of you guys have been in leadership. Verse 3, but the people were thirsty and they grumbled against Moses. And they said, why did you bring us up out of Egypt and make us and our children and our livestock die of thirst? That wasn't an accidental statement. If you remember, Pharaoh said, yeah, sure, children of Israel, you can go. Take all the men and you can go. And Moses had to campaign and fight to get the women and children and the livestock released also. That's where the 10 plagues came in. So they weren't just randomly saying it. There was a specific criticism of Moses. It's not good enough that you bring us out here to die. You also bring our women and children and our livestock. Then Pastor Moses cried out to the Lord and said, what am I to do with these people? They're almost ready to stone me. So, now, you want to talk about a full-on runaway. God has delivered the children of Israel from Egypt. They have, with their own eyes, watched him part the Red Sea. They've had manna. And yet, the minute the circumstances go bad, they cross their arms, they tap their toe, they go, what about this problem? God. Oh, Moses is our leader? Great, he led us to a desert. If there's ever been a people more qualified for a, I'm just gonna start over, Don't say you wouldn't have at least considered it. Like, you people are awful. Moses, I'll set you here. I'm just going So, what we're going to get, we've set the stage. What we're going to see is, what does God do? How does God react? What is the framework? Who is God when we are imperfect? You picked a good day to be in church if you wonder how God feels about you when you're a screw up. Here, there's two kinds of screw ups. People who are like, yep. And other people that will admit that you're a screw up. See, the fundamental function of the gospel was to explain to us that our sin was beyond bad. It was terrible. It was unforgivable. It was so far beyond anything we were going to be able to detach ourselves from. That's the half of what the gospel has done. But the other half of what the gospel has done is to establish that through Jesus, we are more loved and accepted than we could have ever deserved or hoped for. That's the gospel. And as people, what people tend to want to do is we want to try to make our sin not quite as bad. Wasn't that bad. It's not like I killed anybody. Yeah, you did. Well, I didn't kill two people. We're always trying to justify why our sin isn't that bad. And on the other side, we're always trying to say all the good things that we did so as to prove that we earned a little bit of what Jesus did. So where the gospel is driving, our sin was terrible and we're forgiven. We're always trying to bring it back to the middle, almost, it said, like spiritual taxpayers. Well, God's doing something for me, but it's also because I did something for him. It was a trade. If your thought is that somehow you're earning good things from God, please release yourself from that, because you'll also attach yourself to the screw-ups when they come. You will be so attached to your own failures that you don't know how to detach from them. You think it's a good way out to say, well, I'm doing a lot of good, but wait till you're doing a lot of bad. You will be hung by your own jury. So two types of screw-ups. Verse 5, the Lord answered Moses, said, go out in front of the people, take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff which you struck the Nile, and go. The Bible doesn't list specific details unless they matter. Even if you don't understand them, they're there for a reason. If you research long enough, you can eventually get to the bottom of why something was said. So he said, take the elders and your staff, specifically remember your staff, and go out. Do you know that the children of Israel didn't get to watch the rock break open and water come out of it? They didn't get to see it. I think there are times you can be so busy grumbling and complaining and whining. That's the only way I know how to describe whining. It's so gross. But when you're the complainer, here's how it sounds to you. You know, I'm just concerned. I just love Pastor Russ. I just love this church. I just see some things that concern me. Me. And I'm not making fun, but just know, if there's a genuine concern, just do something. Just jump in and help. It's easy. But the children of Israel, they're like, you know, we love Moses. We're just not sure if he's the right guy. I think he has a good heart. And God said, hey, while they're complaining and grumbling, they're about to miss something really cool. Leave them. You come with me. Don't forget your staff. So Moses and the elders, they take off. Verse 6. Then he says this, I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. Have you ever had to go stand before someone? Anybody familiar with this term? That's a fun one. If you're going to go stand before someone, who is it? When you have to go stand before someone, who is that someone generally? As a judge. It's a judge. You're going to go stand before the judge. So this verse says, come to Mount Horeb, and I, God, I'm going to stand before you. Now, if you're Moses, you're like, is this a trick? Have we finally screwed up so bad that you're going to... Because, God, if you're going to stand before me, that puts me... I can't be understanding this right. He says, don't forget your staff. What did his staff represent? Does anybody know? Staff was representative of something. The staff represented judgment and discipline, and God said, don't forget to bring it. Go read the story in your own time and see. It's all there. He says, bring your judgment, come to the mountain, and I'm going to stand before you accused. Oh. Honestly, doesn't the air kind of leave the room for a second? Of like, why? You're going to stand accused before me? We're the screw-ups. I'm leading a bunch of babies. Said, I will stand before you. Bring your staff. And then he says what? Oh, this story starts to get so good. He says, take your judgment and strike what? Rock. Let me read you three verses and see if it starts to make sense a little bit. Matthew 21:42 says, Jesus said to them, did you never read in the scriptures the stone which the builders rejected, this became the chief cornerstone? Isaiah 8:14, Old Testament, then he shall become a sanctuary, but to both the house of Israel, a stone to strike and a rock to stumble over. Romans 9:33, behold, I lay in Zion a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense. And he who believes in him will not be disappointed. Jesus was always represented as the rock. He says, take your judgment, strike or accuse or condemn me. You take your judgment, condemn me, strike the rock, and from that, let me read you. It says, in water, this is all symbolism. This is all there. This is all there if you know where to look. What did water represent in the Old Testament? Life. So God says, go to Mount Horeb. There's a whole different sermon about all the things that happen on Mount Horeb. Great, great study. But for now, I'll just tell you this. He says, take the judgment. I'll stand before you. I'll accept condemnation. You cast judgment onto me, and from that, life will pour out for you. This was in the middle. This was in the middle of a borderline revolt. This was happening as the children of Israel were wanting to stone Moses. God says, Moses, come with me. So Moses did this in the sight of the elders. And he called the place Massa Meribah, which means proving and strife. When Massa or Meribah, when they're listed by themselves, they mean proving and strife. If you've ever gone through a proving period, that's fun. If you've ever gone through a period of strife, that's fun. But when you put them together, what it means is this. Because the Israelites had quarreled, and because they had tested the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? So Moses says, remember this. This is where we said, is the Lord with us or not? Moses was saying, can we please, we're going to deal with good circumstances, and we're going to deal with bad circumstances. Can we please just get to a point where we don't let that just catch us completely off guard? But, from this day forward, God doesn't stand on trial with us anymore. We will no longer ask the question, is God with us or not? Does God love me or not? Does God prefer to forgive me or not? Because remember, this was the Old Testament. This was before Jesus. This was before the blood of the Lamb. All through the Bible, there's an arrow pointing to Jesus, indicating that God's intention for you was to do for you what you couldn't do. It's not a partnership. And legalism will allow you to believe, oh, it's a partnership and God does his part and I do mine. That's not what the word says. God says, I'm doing 100% of it for you. Yep. And I plan to from the beginning. Bible trivia. Exodus. This is Exodus. This is the second book of the Bible. Genesis, Exodus, it's from the beginning. This point in the Bible, people are still sort of scratching their head going, who is God? What's his personality? What's his nature? He was establishing from the beginning his preference of his people. That the expectation of perfection was not in there. He was preparing to give his son for you in the Old Testament. And he was demonstrating this through a series of symbolic gestures that would indicate, I'll stand trial, I'll stand condemned, I'll be struck by your judgment, and life will pour out for you. I think there are times where we keep God at a distance, we keep God at arm's length, because of something that we've created that's not even true. Oh, God's mad at me. If God ever were to allow you to experience his judgment, you wouldn't be here anymore. This idea like, oh man, I'm really in trouble with God. Not yet. Not at all yet. I mean, he'll allow life to kind of guide you along. But if you're keeping God at arm's length because you think God hates you, you have no concept of God's wrath at all. Read through the Old Testament. Read through how God dealt with us before Jesus, and it's still with love and expectation that things are going to be good between us. And I think sometimes, like that little red dog, I believe that I've already run off. Why not just stay gone for a while? When in reality, I'm not mad that she's running around biting cows. That's what she's supposed to do. She's supposed to be tough. She's supposed to be gritty. She's supposed to be just a little hard-headed. That's why I have her. I just want her to come to me when I call her. She doesn't really get in trouble until I say, come here, and she won't. But the reason she won't is she thinks she's already in trouble. So, when you think of God saying, I'll accept your punishment. Have you ever stopped to consider that joy and peace are on the same list as patience and perseverance? Then when God says, oh, you got to long suffer. Oh, yes, Lord, I'll suffer. But he also says, you're supposed to have joy and peace in your life. Oh, I don't deserve that. It's like we decide that we're going to decide for God how God should feel about us, and we're going to decide for God what God should see when he looks at us. And then we're going to act according to our own false assumptions. Let me tell you what God sees when he looks at you. Because of Jesus, because of the rock that was struck on our behalf, when he looks at you, he sees himself. So I think that's the challenge. I think that's the challenge, is to say, well, if that's true, how do I accept that? It's hard. Hey, listen, it's so much harder to believe that God's mad at you than to believe that he's not. It's hard. It's hard to imagine that God is so good that he can look at you and genuinely, from the bottom of his heart, love and approve of you. That's a hard one. It's so much easier to say, I'm just going to live in some weird purgatory between forgiveness and relationship. But let me tell you, according to his word, he says that he has already absorbed the punishment. He's already accepted the punishment. And deep philosophical thought for a second. It says that God lives in all time. He lives in all time. Don't try to wrap your mind around that one.